KABC, Talk Radio, AM 790. And good morning, everyone. Ray Brain with you until 5 o'clock this morning. This morning, we're going to be talking about one of the truly superstars of the halcyon days of radio. His name is Fred Allen, and there's a gentleman in the studio, Mr. Robert Taylor. Mr. Taylor is the author of a new book called Fred Allen, His Life and Wit. Mr. Taylor is the Boston Globe's art and senior book critic, and I have to say hello to him immediately. Mr. Taylor, glad to have you with us.
Glad to be here, Ray.
Why did you write a book about Fred Allen?
Well, first, he was a comic genius, and second, he was unique in his time.
Can't do better than that. He was unique. We also have the founders and head of SPERDVAC. That's SPERDVAC. SPERDVAC, that's the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. John and Larry Gassman.
Thank you, Ray. Glad to be here again.
So here we are, and we're talking about the great Fred Allen. You just had a thing with Robert Taylor at a SPERDVAC meeting, right?
We did. We had we've begun our 15th anniversary convention, which started today over at the Viscount Hotel in Los Angeles. And one of the things among many we did today was a panel with several people who wrote books on old radio, and Robert Taylor was one of them. And he talked about, Fred Allen talked about the book, why the book came about, and some of the things that Fred Allen did on the air, and we'll have a chance to illustrate some of those tonight with audio clips.
Yes, we got a whole bunch of them, thanks to your files. How many shows do you have over at SPERDVAC?
Fred Allen?
No, of old-time radio shows.
Oh, thousands. I'm not sure really how many, because it grows. See, one entered just now. Well, no, now we're another
three or four.
Yeah, see what I mean? It continues to grow. So,
these are unusual brothers, aren't they, Bob?
Yes, I think they're doing a great job in restoring what I think is a very crucial part of our national memory.
It's a heritage that a lot of people have forgotten or never knew existed.
It really is a form of history to do this, and it's one that's overlooked by the more formal historian.
Tell us about Fred Allen. You know, when Fred Allen was at his prime, he was living in a simpler time, a time when America enjoyed a different, certainly more personal form of entertainment, when families used to gather around the living room radio once a week to laugh at his very, very unique humor. When did Fred Allen become Fred Allen? I understand that he had several other names.
Well, he started out in amateur shows under his own name, John Florence Sullivan. But when he went on to vaudeville, he became Freddie James, later shortened to Fred James. And he was in vaudeville and was up in the booking office of a man called Edgar Allen, who booked for the Fox Theaters, who was getting him a job. And there was confusion on the telephone, and the people on the other end mixed up Freddie James and Edgar Allen and came out with Fred Allen. And he saw this for the first time on the marquee and said, well, okay, I'll stick with it.
So his first radio show went on the air when? Now, I don't mean guesting, but his first headlining radio show.
It was the week before the Hoover-Roosevelt election in 1932. I believe it was October 25th.
And he did his last show in, what, 49?
49, June 25th, 49.
So he had about an 18-year run then.
Just about.
That's not bad.
That's wonderful. And James Thurber said that for him, that run on radio was more interesting than Lindbergh's flight.
I believe it. It was a lot more fun, too. He had the nation in stitches. How did Allen's Alley come about, and what year? It was rather late in his career.
Yes, it was. He had experimented around with it. He began it in 1942. It was a kind of throwback to his vaudeville days. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he was making use of radio, because you can't envision Allen's Alley in anything but radio.
It wouldn't play on television, that's for sure.
Yes, and nor did it.
That's right. In fact, it wasn't television that did in the Fred Allen show. It was another radio show.
Stop the Music. And Bert Parks is the MC.
That's right. And Stop the Music was successful in stopping Fred Allen, I think, only because after years of wartime consumer austerity, here was a radio program that was giving away money. And instead of talent, it had money to give away, and Fred could never quite reconcile himself to this.
In fact, didn't Fred Allen pull a real boner at that time trying to head off Stop the Music by offering a $5,000 insurance policy to anyone that might have missed the prize if they'd been called by listening to Stop the Music?
Yes, he did. That was a boner.
Why did it turn out to be a boner?
You couldn't do it anyway. You couldn't bond all those people, and he was trying to do the impossible. He was trying to stop something that couldn't be stopped.
And I guess that he also drove some of those people who'd never heard of Stop the Music over to the other network to just hear what's going on.
Yes, there was a curiosity factor there, and Fred was always insistent upon the fact that there was an intelligent audience for radio comedy.
All right, we're going to take a break, and very shortly we'll be talking, I believe, with Eddie Schwartz in Chicago. He's calling from WGN, and we'll talk with him, and I hope he remembers Fred Allen. He's just one of those young guys. I'm sure he doesn't, but he's heard some of the tapes. And we'll have some of the cuts from the old Fred Allen show, and we'll talk about the big feud between Fred Allen and Jack Benny. That went on for a long time.
Yes, it really was at its height during the early weeks of 1937, but it was spotted on, more or less, throughout the rest of their careers.
Okay, we'll be right back, and when we come back, we'll chat with the folks in Chicago via Eddie Schwartz and WGN for a wee bit here, and then we'll start playing some Fred Allen cuts in the studio. Mr. Robert Taylor, author of the book, Fred Allen, His Life and Wit, along with John and Larry Gassman, the driving force of SpurdVac. That's the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. Stay with us. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Brain. All right, we're back again. Ray Brain with you until who knows what time. We have in the studio Mr. Robert Taylor. His book is called Fred Allen, His Life and Wit. And, of course, the driving force of SpurdVac, people who put this thing together and keep it going, the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. And we have a lot of cuts from the old Fred Allen radio show, and we'll be playing those shortly. But right now, let's check in with Chicago and see how things are with Eddie Schwartz at WGN. Hello, Eddie.
Hi, Ray. Welcome to WGN Radio in Chicago. And I picked a good time to call you for two reasons. Number one, I'm very enamored of what you're doing on your show tonight because I've done similar programs myself.
Okay, you're an old radio buff, huh?
I've got a huge collection. I play things all the time. I've got I'm very lucky to have a company here in Chicago called Radio Spirits. And their President Carl Amari provides me with a tremendous number of programs. If you'd like, I'm going to send you a copy of his catalog.
Yeah, well, that's great. Say hello to, first of all, Robert Taylor. He's written this great book called Fred Allen, His Life and Wit, published by Little Brown.
Mr. Taylor, pleasure. Welcome to Chicago and WGN.
Thank you very much.
I have had the pleasure of playing many hours of Fred Allen's material on the air, and I've loved every minute of it. I also have a surprise for both of you. I have a gentleman in my studio, Ray. I was sitting here talking to this major, major personality, and he's from California.
Okay, before you introduce him,
yes,
there are a couple others in the studio here, and I don't want to slight them.
Okay.
We have John and Larry Gassman of SpurdVac. Do you know SpurdVac?
I've heard of them, yes.
Yes, the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy.
They ought to be making me a member here in about 5 minutes, I would think.
Yes. Well, guess what? You got a couple of votes a few elections ago for our SpurdVac Board of Directors. I don't know how that happened. Did you write yourself in?
No, I didn't, but I'm very flattered to know that.
Oh, well, I'll make them up. Continue on.
All right, please. Contact me about that.
Okay.
I'm sitting here with one of my favorite people in the whole world, Mr. Breen, a gentleman who also listens to late night radio in California, tells me that one of the ways he falls asleep is by listening to you, and I know he's been on your program, so I thought I'd surprise you and call up and see if you know who he is. He's starring in a big show here in Chicago. He's the hottest thing in town. I'm not going to tell you who he is. Mr. Guest, would you like to say hello to Mr. Bream?
Mr. Bream, I write lyrics, and you and I have sat many, many times.
I know who this is. Sammy Kahn.
There you go.
Hey, the great Sammy Kahn.
Fascinating. Isn't that interesting? Mm. We were just talking about him earlier.
Call me or... I wish we had a piano in the studio. Next time that you come over to the show, we're going to have to get a piano in the studio. You know that.
I know. I would be very happy to do that. I'm here in Chicago and a miracle is happening. My one-man show, after all these years, is suddenly crystallized and it's become an emotional thing every night in the theater.
Isn't that great?
People stand and cheer, and it's just... can you imagine me doing my kind of town to the people of Chicago?
Listen, Sammy, you're a living legend, and you carry on this great... I had a guest in the studio. I had the son of the late Nelson Riddle, Christopher Riddle.
Good buddy.
Yeah. Well, he was in here about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he deemed the music that we're talking about not classical music, but American classic music. And I like that title.
He's correct. You know, there is noise. We don't count noise, but Riddle was one of the most incredible things I ever witnessed was the one-time airing of a show called Our Town, NBC, color, an hour and a half, special. Frank Sinatra playing the lead role. Mr. Paul Newman playing the young boy, Eva Marie Saint playing the young girl, and Sinatra singing, and Nelson Riddle a block away, accompanying, scoring. It was a miracle of I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Ray. I have a copy of that show in black and white. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any way to tape shows in those days. And if you see the genius of Nelson Riddle, he was just special.
There was no one quite like him.
You know what happened? When Mr. Kahn gets back to California, Ray, you ought to have him come right in and sit with you one night.
Well, it's long overdue. We haven't done it in some years.
That's right. But I'll give you a call now that we have reacquainted ourselves across the country.
I got to tell Ray how this all came about tonight. I was asking Sammy if he ever dreams of songs or dreams of lyrics and gets up and writes them down. And he was telling me, Ray, that he purposely listens to the radio at night so as not to have that happen. And he never goes to bed without his radio on, and your name came up. So we thought we'd surprise and give you a call. Turned out to be a good night to do it.
Yes, indeed. Well, he's one of the greats. There's no doubt about it. And tell us about the great song, or the Hall of... What do you call it? The song...
Songwriters Hall of Fame.
Songwriters Hall of Fame, yes.
Well, I tell you, that's another miracle. I was telling Eddie here that this was Johnny Mercer's dream. He was the first president, and on his deathbed almost, he asked me to take over. And if I ever meet him in that lyric writing's heaven, I'm going to get even. I've spent the last 15 years trying to build a home in New York, a museum, and I think we're going to get it done.
Well, you should.
It deserves to be done.
But one thing, I've got to tell you a story that I don't know if he's told you, Eddie, or not, but when we lament where music is gone today, popular music, Sammy says, but wherever you go in the world, wherever you hear the American classic music being played and sung,
it's America's single most important ambassador.
It certainly
American
is.
American popular song.
And those songs will live forever. I told you a couple of my favorites. We all know the great list of music, and I know your favorite. I think it's Call Me Irresponsible. But
well, you know why I say it's my favorite? I say it has 5-syllable words, and I come from a 1-syllable neighborhood.
but there are a couple I told you I like, Sammy, and that goes way back, but they're both beautiful songs. It's Magic. And the other one is Time After Time.
Mm-hmm. Do you take a weekend off and come into Chicago and hear all these songs?
I'd love to.
Are you still flying as much as you did?
Oh, sure. Sure.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know the mayor will get you into O'Hare.
No, thanks. I'll stay away from O'Hare.
Sammy knows the mayor. Sammy was a guest of honor at City Hall, where the mayor gave him the key to Chicago. You were a big star the other day, Sam.
Yes, I sang to the mayor. I said, my kind of town, Chicago, is my kind of town, Chicago, is this welcome makes me glad. And may I add, I knew your dad.
now, listen, you've written them for every other city, but you got to write one for Los Angeles. I know it's hard, but you got to write one for L.A.
I wrote a song called Don't Fall in Love in L.A. And I'm going to do it on your show.
All right, Sammy.
I love you, and I thank you for talking.
Take care. We'll
Give
get together love. Soon. We'll
and
do
Mr.
it again.
Mr. Robert Taylor.
Yes.
I knew the original.
We'll see you, Sammy.
And thank you, Ray, for letting us bust in here on your program. I know your listeners are waiting to hear some of the recordings you have of Fred Allen. To all of your guests there in the studio, remember, here in Chicago, we love those programs, too.
Yes,
Great.
Indeed.
Thank
take
you.
Care, Eddie.
Good night, gang.
Right.
Good night.
Good night. Eddie Schwartz at WGN.
He's a legend back there.
He really is.
Yeah.
And so is Sammy Kahn.
Yep.
We'll have to bring him back on again very soon. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll continue on with Fred Allen, his life and wit, with Robert Taylor in the studio, along with John and Larry Gassman of Spurdvac. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Brame. If you'd like to join us, our phone number is 520-TALK, T-A-L-K, San Fernando Valley 990-TALK, Santa Monica in the West Side 301. Everything ends in TALK, T-A-L-K, Orange County, Riverside 750, Pasadena, Glendale, Burbank 244, San Gabriel Valley 448, South Bay 679, Long Beach, Downey, Lakewood, Linwood, Paramount, San Pedro and Compton area, that number is 639, and TALK, T-A-L-K. Robert Taylor is in the studio along with John and Larry Gassman of Spurdvac. John and Larry, of course, have been trying to preserve and promote, as the name implies, radio drama, variety, and comedy for a long time. And we'll get into Spurdvac and what they do here a little bit later on. But Robert Taylor is with us, and Robert Taylor has written this great book published by Little Brown called Fred Allen, His Life and Wit. When did you decide that you wanted to write about the fabled Fred Allen?
Well, it was about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. Elliot Norton, the Boston theater critic, suggested that he'd make a great subject for a biography. And when I went to the Boston Public Library, where they have most of Fred Allen's materials, I found that he was right.
Okay, we were talking about when he went on network radio. That was 1932. When did he really become a force? It wasn't when he first went on, was it?
Yes, it was, actually.
Really?
he was an almost instant success on radio because he was a very verbal comedian and very quick and made for this medium. And within very short order, he had 3 out of every 4 radio households.
3 out of every 4?
3 out of every 4, and approximately 20 million listeners at that time.
We're talking about the feud he had with Jack Benny. How did that start? What was it all about?
Well, Fred was the first person on radio to use amateurs. He'd been an amateur himself and had started out that way. And he had on his program a 10-year-old violinist, Stuart Kamens, from Long Island, and played the B. And when he finished, he said, "Only 10 years old and you can play the B like that. Why, Jack Benny ought to be ashamed of himself." And Jack was listening and laughed at this. And so on his next program, he said, "I can too play the B as well as that." And he had some people from Waukegan who said he couldn't. And so it went back and forth.
All right, let's play a little bit of vintage Fred Allen. John and Larry, this first one is the Bath Club Review. This is 1932.
This is early, early Fred Allen. What you'll notice is that if you've heard Fred Allen, he is much faster here. He doesn't wait for laughs. It's almost the way he used to do it in vaudeville. It was rapid fire. And this is December 25 of 1932, and a typical example of the Leonard Bath Club Review.
All right, let's take a listen.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, the Linnet Bath Club Review starts a new series of radio presentations. We have had so many requests to repeat some of our earlier program backgrounds that in the future broadcast, we are going to remain in each business for 2 or 3 weeks. We hope that you will have as much fun listening in as we have in preparing and presenting these little reviews. Tonight, we take you to the court of Judge Allen. Order in the court, please. Order in the court.
Sit down, everybody.
First case.
John Flood versus Caesar Bemis. Assault and battery.
What happened, John?
Well, I was working at my filling station on the night of the 7th, Your Honor, when this man here...
Mr. Bemis?
Yes, he drove up in a roller skate.
A roller skate? Hey, I'll brain him.
Now, wait a minute. Wait. Order in the court, please.
If he makes fun of my car again, I'll...
Sit down, Bemis.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, Mr. Flood, continue.
Well, as I was saying, he drove up the filling station, and I waited on him, and he slugged me.
That's all, Flood. He hit you for nothing?
Yes, Your Honor. He didn't charge me a cent.
Now, Bemis, take the stand and tell us your version.
Yes, Your Honor. 6 months ago, I bought a small car.
A baby Boston?
Yes, Your Honor. And my life's been miserable ever since.
People laugh at you when you're in it.
Yes, Your Honor.
And dogs bark in through the windshield?
Yes, I couldn't stand it any longer.
But why did you assault Mr. Flood?
I drove up to his filling station and said, give me some gas and oil.
Yes?
He said a teaspoonful of gas and 4 drops of oil ought to pick you up.
Gosh, that's a pretty old joke.
Yeah, I heard it a million times since I bought the car. But I didn't say anything. When I paid him, he said that'll be 45 cents for weaning your scooter.
And then you struck him.
No. No, he looked at the car and said, if you want me to sneeze in the tires, it'll be 15 cents extra.
And then you punched him.
No, I threw the car at him.
Blood, you're fined $2.32 for assault. Bemis, for throwing the car, I'll fine you $3 for the battery. Next case.
Your Honor, Officer Moyfee. You're at...
That's 1932.
Mm-hmm. That's 32. I noticed Doc Rockwell in the cast there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Which one was Doc Rockwell?
Bemis, I think.
Was he?
Yeah.
We were wondering who that was.
Yeah.
Let me write that down.
All right, we'll continue on as we travel down Allen's Alley. Fred Allen, his life and wit with Robert Taylor and John and Larry Gassman spurred back in just a moment. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Brain. Back again, Ray Brain with you until 5 this morning. My guest, Robert Taylor, author of the book Fred Allen, His Life and Wit. Mr. Taylor is the Boston Globe's art and book critic. You're the senior book critic there. Are you going to review your own book?
No, it wasn't reviewed in the Globe.
It wasn't?
No.
I see. Too bad. The 1932 clip was interesting, but we... go now to another year. Let's see. This begins with Benny and Aunt Allen. And let's see if I recall. This is 1937. Is that right, John?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay, let's take a little...
This is the one about Benny and Allen at the beginning of the B clip, right? Where Benny is trying to find... they're trying to find out if Benny really did play the B.
Okay, yes. All right.
So shortly after the feud began.
All right, here we go.
When I played the bee last Sunday night, I didn't completely vindicate myself. There's one small point yet to be settled.
What is that, Jack?
Well, I asked Stuart Cannon, that little boy who originally played the bee and caused all my trouble with Allen, to come up here tonight, and I'm going to find out if he's really 10 years old.
Find out how to play the bee, too.
I played it all right. But I have my doubts about Allen's statement. If that child is over 10, and I think he is... then Mr. Allen has deceived his listeners, thereby misinforming over 400 people around the country. Anyway, I'm going to find out the truth.
All right, what happens now? Is that it? That's all of it, huh?
That's all of that.
Oh.
The next clip is Fred Allen's response.
Oh, let's...
See, Fred Allen was on Wednesday, about 4 or 5 days after Benny was on, so he had all kinds of times early on
to
come up with some kind of
right,
response. Yeah.
All right, here we go.
While I think of it, did you hear Mr. B last Sunday?
Oh, yes. Jack had a pretty good program, didn't he, Fred?
You don't think it sounded any better just because it was coming out of the Waldorf Astoria, do you? I'll bet he won't get his program in there again next Sunday without baggage.
Why? What do you mean, Fred? Jack didn't pull any faux pas at the Waldorf, did he?
Why, that Oak Day. You know, coming out, walking down one of the long halls there, he saw a lot of empty finger bowls stacked up on a table.
You mean to say Jack didn't know what they were?
He never saw a finger bowl before. He said, gosh, the next war is going to be terrible. They're making trench hats for children.
No kidding.
Imagine that guy driving up in front of the Waldorf in a trailer.
Goodness, the doorman must have been plenty mortified.
At the Waldorf?
Yeah.
The doorman at the Waldorf didn't even know what the trailer was. He thought one of the penthouses blew off the roof.
Oh, say, Fred, did you hear Jack say that you misinformed your radio audience? 400 people around the country?
He wouldn't know what it meant to cater to the 400.
Oh, and another thing I thought was funny was when he grills little Stuart Kanan, the
another
boy who played...
Wait a minute. What was the first thing you thought was funny? Never mind another thing you thought was funny. Now, let's isolate that thing that was funny.
When Jack flew off the roof.
Oh, but you said about little Stuart Kanan, the...
He grilled the little fella, you know.
Oh, that little boy who played the bee. Mm-hmm. Why that big bully picking on a little fella like Stuart? Why doesn't he pick on somebody his size? He's the kind of a guy who gives Shirley Temple a hot foot. Why, of all the cowards, the last time he got into an argument with the Dion quintuplets... He invited them outside one by one.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Fred. Jack's all right.
I think I'll go over and see him next Sunday. Why, I'll...
Wait a minute, Fred. You're not going to break up his program, are you?
I'll tell him a thing or two. No, I won't tax him mentally. I'll just tell him a thing.
That's all settled.
It's all settled until Sunday. Now, I'm going to put my venom on to perk, and I hope to have it ready by Sunday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
All right. Now, in a minute, we're going to hear of Alan and Benny together. How did that happen? How did they get together?
Well, it began to build, obviously, with response going back and forth, and they went to the... Pierre
Hotel.
Benny was in New York for, was it a Bond tour?
Yes.
Some idea. And they needed a room big enough to hold all the people because it began to build week after week after week. So in a minute we'll hear about when they got together and the culmination of it, which was interesting. It was billed as the fight of the century.
Among many other fights of the century,
including Ali and a bunch of other people, yeah.
All right, we'll be right back with our guest, Robert Taylor, who's written a book on Fred Allen called His Life and Wit, and John and Larry Gassman of Spurdvac. We're talking about Fred Allen here this morning. If you want to talk about Fred, I suggest you start calling right now while we have some open lines. In Los Angeles, 520-TALK. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Brain. Guest is Robert Taylor. Robert Taylor has written a book called Fred Allen, His Life and Wit. John and Larry Gassman are with us, and they supplied the Fred Allen show cuts here this morning. They run an organization called Spurdvac. Boy, that is a mouthful. But we all know what it means together. Let's say it now. The Society, come on, John and Larry.
Serve and encourage radio, drama, variety, and comedy. Incorporated. Ink. Yeah, you forgot about the ink.
Ink, yes. Ink.
There are ink spots there, too, speaking of music.
All right, let's play this clip out of a show. What year was this when Alan and Benny did it together?
This is from March 14, 1937.
Okay, let's take a listen to see what this sounded like. Here we go.
Now, listen, Alan, what's the idea of breaking in here in the middle of my singing?
Singing?
Yes.
Now, listen, Benny, I didn't mind it when you scraped that overnight bag 2 weeks ago and called that playing the bee.
Yeah.
But when you stand here tonight and set that whooping cough to music and call that singing, you're going too far.
Oh, you didn't like it, huh?
Like it? Why, you make Andy Devine sound like Lawrence Tibbet.
Now, look here, Alan. I don't care what you say about my singing or my violin playing on your own program. But when you come up here, be careful. After all, I've got listeners.
Keep your family out of it.
My family likes my singing and my violin playing, too.
Your violin playing?
Yeah.
You're using the verb loosely, Mr. Benson. If I was a pony, and found out that my tail... that any part of my tail was being used in your violin bow, I'd hang my head in my oat bag from then on.
Well, you listen to me, you Wednesday night hawk. Another crack like that, and Town Hall will be looking for a new janitor.
Why, you fugitive from a Ripley cartoon? Bend your nose around until if you want to smell anything, you'll have to curb it. You lay a hand on me. Anything we'll say accidentally will be better than the script.
Well, that's a funny one.
That's wonderful.
Did Fred Allen write most of his own material, or did he have a bunch of writers?
Well, he did have writers, but that was simply due to the problems, logistics of handling a radio show. He wrote most of his own stuff, and what came out of it always had his imprint.
On the Benny shows, of course, most of it, and vice versa, when Jack would do Fred's show and when Fred would do Jack's show, the local writers would usually write the routines, and Fred, when he was on Benny's show, would okay it and vice versa, because they had confidence in each other's writers.
That's interesting.
And a lot of what you just heard was ad lib, of course, with Benny falling all over the floor.
Sure. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, I want to talk with a man who says he's Fred Allen's godchild. William Bill Diamond, that we'll do that here in just a second, so stay with us. This is KBC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Brain. In Los Angeles, our phone number is 520-TALK, T-A-L-K, San Fernando Valley, 990, you know what, Santa Monica and the West Side, 301, and talk. Right now, let's go to San Bernardino and talk with William Bill Diamond. He says he's Fred Allen's godchild. Mr. Diamond, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us about, how did you become Fred Allen's godchild?
Well, I'm an honorary godchild, but my folks were in show business with Fred and Porty for years, and well, through the years, we were really together a lot. And one thing I would like to say about the early broadcast, that they did broadcast twice.
Oh, yes, we know that. In fact, the next segment coming up after the news...
Okay, I didn't know whether you had that or not.
Oh, yes, we're going to show the difference between the East Coast early feed
because
the one for the West Coast.
Because that was something that didn't think would be brought out.
Do you know what time they did the West Coast feed?
Well, they did it later, I don't know.
Midnight.
Oh, good night.
Midnight in New York.
I was pretty small then.
And, how would you like to do a radio show at 12 midnight? I'd be right at home.
Yes, you would, yeah.
And also on the so-called feud, of course, this was really a promo, and there really wasn't much of a feud because, you know, Porty used to go to Tiffany's and pick out a very, you know, very nice... present for Mary when they would go to the coast.
It was a fictitious feud.
What's that?
It was a fictitious feud for radio.
Oh, yes.
And a gimmick feud. No, of course it wasn't real. But
yeah.
In fact, they were very good friends.
Oh, yeah, they were very good friends. But, of course, Fred and Porty were very private people. They did not, they didn't circulate too much with the... show people. They were very private.
Bill, how close were you to Fred Allen and Portland Hopper?
Well, I was fairly young. I used to see them quite often, but as I say, they were very private.
So, have you heard about the new book by Robert Taylor?
No, I haven't. I'm very interested in it.
Yeah, it's published by Little Brown. It's a hardcover book called Fred Allen, His Life and Wit. Got it?
Got it.
Okay.
Published by Little Brown. Good book. Outstanding book. If you have a chance to get it, then by all means do it.
Why don't you say hello to Robert Taylor here, the author?
Hello, Robert.
Hello, Joe. I understand that you're an honorary godson.
Yes.
Fred had at least 12 godchildren that I know of, including one of James Mason's children.
Oh, yeah. They were very good friends of the Masons.
It's almost as if you could ride in and become godchild of the month.
Well, I don't know. That was later.
Yeah.
It was,
I think that was part of the insurance
that
thing.
That was after. I think probably one of the other ones was from...
One of their children Portland?
The Masons, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They did after Portland.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
But... James Mason did name one of her children after Portland.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good, Bill. I appreciate your filling us in on Fred Allen. And when you think of those days, how do you remember Fred Allen?
As a very nice and very private person. He was always polite. When we would go out, he would always go... Well, we'd go out in the way places. And... he shunned publicity, and very private.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for reminiscing.
Bye.
Bye-bye. The picture that he painted, is that the picture that you were able to find out, Mr. Taylor?
Oh, yes, that's undoubtedly true. He was a very devout man, religiously, and very private kind of person.
That's difficult to do in show business.
Yes, particularly since you are a performer and your business is to present yourself to a wide public.
I don't think you could get away with that today, could you?
I don't
It'd be very
know.
Difficult.
I mean, I really don't know how it would be today. I remember that a man named George Libby was telling me that he used to walk with his father and Fred to Mass every morning, and he used to pass this man who was very haughty and gave them a glance of disdain every time they went by, and George Libby said, "Well, who's that?" And Fred said, "He's the music critic for the Sears Roebuck catalog."
He was just a naturally witty guy.
He was.
So, would he think these things up, or would he just struggle over a typewriter and try and figure out something that was funny?
Well, he struggled, but he also was able to, he had the gift, and he was able to have a whirlwind wisecrack as fast as anybody in the business.
And that's the way it should be, and those one-liners are awfully hard to have a comeback like that.
But he did work over them, and it did not come easily.
Now, when you wrote the book, did you find out anything about Fred Allen that you were surprised about?
Only that he was so universally admired, really.
You mean in other countries as well?
I don't know how well known he was outside the United States, but...
But in this country?
In this country.
Mm-hmm. And his ratings were always right there in the top?
Until the end.
Mm-hmm. Until Stop the Music stopped.
Yes, he was on the cover of Time magazine in 1947, and 1948 he was 38th in the ratings.
He went from like a number three show to...
He went from first to...
First?
First to 38.
Wow.
First to 38, and it was Stop the Music that...
That did it.
That did it. Wow. Not another television show, because television was waiting in the wings in those days, but it was another radio show that
That's
did
right.
it.
That's right.
We'll be right back right after the news. Robert Taylor and John and Larry Gassman have spurred back. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, KABC Los Angeles, 1 o'clock. KABC Talk Radio, AM 790. Ray Brame, and in the studio, Robert Taylor and John and Larry Gassman of Spurdback. We're talking about Fred Allen this morning, his life and wit. That's the name of a new book by Robert Taylor.
And John, Larry, and Robert, tell us about the East Coast show and the West Coast shows. Now, in those days, they wouldn't allow, we didn't have tape recording, of course, and even though they did have acetate recording, these big 16-inch platters, they would they were not broadcastable. In other words, they didn't think the quality was nearly good enough to broadcast. So that meant you had to do the shows live, one for the West Coast, one for the East Coast. Tell us about that.
The show, frequently on the East Coast version, they would do something that they thought would work, and if it didn't work, then they would say, all right, let's see if we can change that and tweak it a little bit. But oftentimes the shows would come out differently, especially when you were working with Fred Allen, who loved to ad-lib. And if they happened to go over for a nightcap somewhere along the line, the shows might turn out drastically different.
As I hear it, as it so happened out here, as we reversed it, the West Coast show was
always funnier.
Was always funnier.
And much
because
different.
That was the late show. They'd
sure.
do the East Coast show 3 hours earlier.
Right.
So in between the two shows, they'd go to Nick Adele's or something and
out
have
here.
A few libations, and
mm-hmm.
The other show was very, very loose.
And on occasion, some of the actors would forget all about the second show. It happened occasionally. You know, the actor said, give me a wake-up call for 11 o'clock, and the operator thought he meant 11 a.m., so they forgot about the second show.
All right, you want to give us an example of what this is like, right?
Right. This is a show with Jack Benny and Fred... No, excuse me, let's see. Yeah, Jack Benny and Fred Allen. Now, earlier on, this is the Benny Show, and Robert Ripley and Kate Smith had already guested, and it's near the tail end of the show, and Fred Allen has just come in. This is the East Coast version of the show.
The East Coast version of the show.
From March 27 of 38.
Okay, let's listen.
Come in. Well, look who's here. Come on in, Fred. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm certainly surprised to see so many of you in here. It's not raining outside, is it?
No, it's not raining, Fred. These people are all here to see me.
And you're not giving away dishes or anything?
No, sirree, it's just me.
Now, look, Jack, you couldn't draw a crowd as big as this if you were a gutter on New Year's Eve.
Now, listen, Fred, you're here to work, so take off your coat and let's go.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. Before we start this Punch and Benny show, there's something we've got to straighten out right now.
What's that, Fred?
I'm not going to open my mouth on this program, except to yawn, until you give me what you promised me.
What I promised you?
You know, don't play possum, Benny. Now, hand over that Boy Scout knife.
Oh, yeah, I knew you'd remember that. All right, here it is. Wait till I take the chain off.
I want the knife, chain, and everything that goes with it.
Oh, I suppose you even want this elk's tooth.
No, you can put that back in your mouth.
Well, here's the knife, Fred. Take it and consider our deal closed.
Now, wait a minute. You're not rushing me into this. I want to see if it's in good condition first. Here's the big blade. There's the corkscrew.
Yeah.
There's the fingernail file. There's the ping pong paddle. There's the bottle opener. Hey, what's this thing here?
That's a folding bed. Are you satisfied?
Well, I guess it's all right. Say, Jack, have you, my mood changes here.
I see.
Jack, have you,
the scripts can go from now on, I see.
It's too late. It should have gone before.
That's right.
Jack, have you been having a good time in New York? Have you seen any shows or anything?
Yes, Fred. I saw the Ed Wynn show. That was swell. I saw a George M. Cohn show. That was grand. And then I saw your picture. Well.
Well, what about it?
Nothing, Fred, but if you got paid for that picture, and I think you did, you should split 50-50 with Santa Claus.
Now, look, Jack, if you're referring to that screen triumph, Sally, Irene, and Alan, that picture... the studio forgot to put me in it. I just put
yes,
my...
Yes, I know.
That picture is funnier than Don Wilson thinks you are.
Is that so? Did you ever hear yourself enjoy you?
No, but I'm having my mirror wired for sound. I'll get around to it. You're jealous. That's what's the matter with you.
Jealous? Why, well, I made a picture last year called Artisan Model that was a sensation. I got 85 belly laughs.
I'll say you did. You should have pulled in your stomach, too. It was terrible.
All right. Now, that was the East Coast show.
That's right.
That was the early show. Then, at 12 midnight New York time, they would do the West Coast show. Now, we'll hear the same thing all over again. Or are we going to hear the same thing?
Oh, not quite.
Not quite. All right, take a listen. Here we go.
Come in. Well, look who's here. Come on in, Fred. All I need.
Me and two ass friends?
Yeah. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm certainly surprised to see so many of you in here tonight.
It's not raining outside, is it?
No, it's not raining, Fred. These people are all here to see me.
And you're not giving away dishes or anything, Mr. Benny?
No, sir, it's just me.
Now, look, Jack, you couldn't draw a crowd as big as this if you were a gutter on New Year's Eve.
I couldn't, eh?
With running water, I'll throw it in.
Now, listen, Fred. You're here to work, so take off your coat and let's go.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. Before we start this Punch and Benny show, there's something we've got to straighten out right now.
What's that, Fred?
I'm not going to open my mouth on this program except to yawn until you give me what you promised me last week.
What I promised you?
You know. Now, don't play possum, Benny. Hand over that Boy Scout knife.
Oh, yes. I knew you'd remember that. All right, here it is. Wait till I take the chain off.
I want the knife, chain, and everything that goes with it.
Oh, I suppose you even want this elk's tooth.
No, you can put that back in your mouth.
Well, here's the knife, Fred. Take it and consider our deal closed.
Now, wait a minute. You're not rushing me into this thing. Let me see if this knife's in good condition. There's the big blade.
Yeah.
There's the corkscrew, the fingernail file. There's the ping pong paddle. Bottle open. Hey, what's this thing here?
That's a folding bed. Are you satisfied?
Well, I guess it's all right. But, well, Jack, my mood changes here.
Yes, I know.
Coming in the mood now. Mm-hmm. Have you been having a good time in New York? Have you seen any of the shows or anything?
Yes, Fred, I saw the Ed Wynn show. That was swell. I saw George M. Cohen show. That was grand. And then I saw your picture. My mood changes here.
There wasn't an S on that well, by any chance. Well, what about it?
Nothing, Fred.
Oh, wait.
But if you got paid for that picture, and I think you did, you should split 50-50 with Santa Claus.
First time I ever saw a radio comedian who was his own studio audience. Listen, Jack, if you're... If you're a fine time, I go on. The first show, I didn't get on at all. Now, here's the second when I'm just creeping in at the finish. Listen, Jack, if you're referring to that screen triumph, Sally, Irene, and Alan, that picture is funnier than Don Wilson thinks you are.
Is that so?
You're jealous, that's all.
That's so. Do you ever hear yourself enjoy you?
Oh.
Well, jealous. Well, I made a picture last year called Artisan Models. It was a sensation. I got 85 belly laughs.
I'll say you did. You should have pulled in your stomach, too.
All right, that was the West Coast show, the second show.
And you know, they were only about 11 seconds different in timing.
Really?
After all the different ad-libs, yeah, you'd think it would have been more than that.
Yes, indeed. Well, they were different. There's no doubt about that. And the West Coast show was a better show.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a quick break here and come back and start taking phone calls. Now, if you want to talk about Fred Allen, if you enjoyed Allen's Alley and what characters on Allen's Alley, Senator Claghorn, Mrs. Nussbaum, Titus Moody, Huggy Bub, any of those things, give us a call because we have Fred Allen's life and wit chronicled by Robert Taylor. Robert Taylor's in the studio, and we have, of course, John and Larry Gassman of Spirdvac, who supplied all of these great cuts from the Fred Allen radio show. And we'll be back and start taking your calls in Los Angeles, 520-TALK, T-A-L-K,
In the San Fernando Valley, it's 990. You know what? Santa Monica in the West Side, 301. Orange County, Riverside, 750. Pasadena, Glendale, Burbank, 244. San Gabriel Valley, 448. South Bay, 679. Long Beach, Downey, Lakewood, Linwood, Paramount, San Pedro, and Compton area, that number 639. And Talk, TALK. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Brame. In Los Angeles, the number is 520-TALK. We're talking about the late Fred Allen, his life and wit. That's the name of a new book by Robert Taylor. He's in the studio along with John and Larry Gassman of Spirit Vac. Let's go to the phones, and we have on the... Wait a minute. On the phone, we have none other than Vanessa. Lawrence, Vanessa, good morning.
Hi, Ray.
How are you?
Gee, thanks for playing that.
Well, it was written for you, so that's the least I can do, right?
Listen, you know, I used to hear him. I came to America in 1938, and I guess I learned English on Fred Allen and Jack Benny and Charlie McCarthy. But I met him when I was about 14 through the Quiz Kids.
Right, you were on the show with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He, Mr. Taylor, he was a guest several times on Quiz Kids, and he loved the kids. And he used to entertain us, you know, backstage with his stories before, and then he went on the show, and he was a judge. But I remember one time he hated the network censor, and he'd be furious.
Oh, yes, we have some stories to tell about that.
He'd be furious that some unseen ad man would, at the last minute, blue pencil a very carefully honed script. And even though, as you indicated, he and his cast could ad-lib brilliantly, the jokes that are strong have to be structured, you know, like mathematically structured.
Yes.
So anyway, Fred Allen's response, he got so mad one day to a last-minute cut that he was to go on the air, and so he ad-libbed the following sentence. Portland, he said, this is on air live, if I were to put all the network censors cuts end to end, I could take a 2-week vacation. Just like that. I mean, he made that up.
That's clever.
In his book, Robert Taylor talks about Fred Allen talking about the fact that if they took all the snippets of the ends of shows and put them together with the time that they had saved, one of the censors could take a 2-week vacation.
Maybe so, that's a version. It's another version
right.
of it. Yeah.
Sure.
You know, people remember.
Excuse me, Vanessa. Tell us about that, Bob.
Well, he said this, and of course, he was. It became eventually a First Amendment issue, and. Red Skelton and Bob Hope got in on this about Fred being cut off the air on this. And eventually the network gave way. And
Jack Benny got into it, too. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah.
He poked fun at BBDO, too, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like that.
Yeah, said it sounded like a trunk falling downstairs.
That was, of course, Batten, Barton, Durston, and Osborne, one of the greatest of the advertising agencies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he called it Button, Burton, Bitten, and Muchenfoss. Or Muchenfoss.
Right.
and they didn't like that. But what was it that... I know. You say it here in the book. Just as the show was about to begin, Allen was instructed by censors to delete all comments concerning NBC's bureaucracy. What did he say about the bureaucracy?
Well, he didn't. He did a parody in which he treated them rather roughly, so mm-hmm. they didn't like this. This was a
no-no.
Yeah. So... he was cut off the air more than once.
So he refused to delete the comments about NBC's bureaucracy. On the orders of Clarence L. Menser, the network's vice president in charge of programming, Allen was cut off the air for 35 seconds.
Right. The most expensive 35 seconds in the program's history.
Why?
Well, because it was just dead air. You know, if they had paid for it.
But you said that J. Walter Thompson sent them a bill, too, and a substantial one at that.
Yeah. Exactly. He used to call the vice president who did that Mr. Ulcers with suspenders.
Go ahead, Vanessa.
No, the ad agency represented the worst and sometimes the best because, I mean, I think Footcone and Belding did a wonderful job out here with Frigidaire later, but the ad agency was the enemy.
As far as Fred was concerned, that was true.
Well, you know, I think he was very courageous, and I think Groucho Marx then followed in his in the footsteps, mm-hmm. and Goody Ace then when he wrote for Perry Como and Tallulah. And there's always been the friction between the free speech of an artist as opposed to the business people and the accountants and the bookkeepers and the people behind the scenes who really own the means of communication.
Yes, it's not unusual for a performer today to kid the product or to poke fun at some of the institutions involved, but in Fred's time it was unheard of.
Well, you know, later when Eisenhower ran for president, the big problem was that the ad agency took over the campaign and they sold the president like soap. And
yeah.
From then on in, we had to combat the fact that the people did not have free access to a candidate anymore.
Vanessa, your dog is ad-libbing.
I think that's Lassie.
My dog is outside barking at the Iranians.
Is that a plant?
What?
Is that a plant?
What does that mean?
An Iranian? Those are plants.
No. It's not a plant.
I see.
They're neighbors, unfortunately.
Why?
They've come in with a lot of money and are trying to buy out the street, and we're the lone holdout on this part of the street.
All right. Thank you, Vanessa.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Hey, listen, tell John that I can't make the dinner tomorrow night.
Oh, okay.
Sorry to hear that.
Everybody will know.
I got to go to Bill Moran's show.
Oh, okay. All right.
Tell us about what she's talking about.
Okay, we at Spurdvac, it's our 15th anniversary. And so we've been having a convention all week. We started today, and it'll continue on through tomorrow, including, by the way, Ray Bream and Lena Ramai and Frank Duvall with the panel saluting the big bands. Ray,
tomorrow is today, Mary.
Sorry.
You didn't...
That's right. It is later today. It's later than I think. It's now Saturday.
Mm-hmm. To quote Arch Obler, it's later than I think.
Yes.
Later today at 4 o'clock, you will be saluting the big bands. You, of course, in your former life being a
big band remote announcer.
Not a remote announcer, but a big band remote announcer.
He was a friendly guy.
Yeah,
okay.
All right. And Frank Duvall, fine musical arranger and director, he'll be there. And Lena Ramai, whom you've had on the show many times, who, of course, worked for many people, Ziggy Kugat and Bing Crosby, among others. And that's at 4 today. That's one of many, many
things. And
panels.
It's going to be where?
At the Viscount Hotel in Los Angeles at 9750 Airport Boulevard.
Now, is the general public invited?
Everyone's invited, including a Lux Radio Theater recreation tomorrow night of Arsenic and Old Lace.
So, going to do a Lux Radio Theater recreation?
Right. Recreation.
That's right.
You're
going to
have
Nolan.
John Milton Kennedy there?
Yes. Yes.
He'll be there. And
Lux presents Hollywood.
Mm, that's right. Jeanette Nolan, Pat Buttram will be there.
Really?
Peggy Weber, a lot of fine radio people, yeah. So it'll be happening all day
long. Things are going to be happening all day long, yeah. And you're all welcome to come, show up, and have a good time.
Well, when do you open the doors?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock in the morning, and it goes right on through until when?
Till 5 with the workshops and then the dinner and the recreation.
Hopefully
beginning
we're gonna
at
get 7:30. Out of it by 10:30.
Yeah.
You're going to have a full day.
It'll be a full day. Oh, yeah.
I'll show up around 3:30.
Okay.
I'll stay for din, then I'm going to leave.
Are you? You don't have to work.
Don't have to work. I have to do a lot of other things, however.
Sure.
What's on the docket for later in the evening? The Lux Radio Theater recreation, I guess, huh?
Uh-huh. Arsenic and Old Lace. Should be a lot of fun.
Well, those were great, great shows. There was nothing quite like the Lux Radio Theater.
No. Nothing. It was a stalwart of network radio, especially here in Los Angeles.
Nothing against John Milton Kennedy, but I loved when Cecil B. DeMille would say, good night from Hollywood.
Yes. Yeah, he was known for that. That was his own little catchphrase.
That's right.
People tried to imitate him, but it never quite worked out.
Yeah, that's true. All right, we'll be right back with Robert Taylor, John and Larry Gassman of Spurdvac, and, of course, in the studio, Robert Taylor with his book, Fred Allen, His Life and Wit. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Brain. ALK. I know this is not regarding Fred Allen, but we were talking about Lux Radio Theater, and I mentioned Cecil B. DeMille and his goodbye from Hollywood. Listen to this.
This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.
I'll
request radio. You say it, we'll play it.
That's right. You got it.
Dig that out of the vinyl vault somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. Yeah. Let's say hello to Marvin of the movies.
Good morning, Ray. How are
you?
Hello,
Marvin.
And good morning, Robert, John, and Larry.
Hello there, Marvin.
Boy, I'm so happy that you're talking about John F. Sullivan this morning.
Well,
John Florence.
That's right.
You know, I remember as a very young, young boy, I used to listen to that program all the time. And just let me go on to one thing for a moment, talking about Cecil B. DeMille. Ray, do you know that when he was replaced by William Keeley, because he refused to pay that, what was it, a dollar?
Yep. Yeah, a dollar to AFTRA.
That's really something else. Yeah. Robert, can you tell me, I can't remember exactly what Fred Allen said. I don't know if it was either the critic's heart or the critic's brains. You could take all the critic's hearts, put it in the eye of a flea, and
sincerity.
Still have a lot of room left over.
Yeah,
you
that's
take
it.
All the sincerity.
Yeah.
Sincerity, okay.
Yes.
Okay, so it was on the same line. I can remember Minerva Pius and Kenny Delmar and Titus Moody, who became the Pepperidge Farm
driver. Parker Finley.
Just great. Now, I probably have, I would guess, almost every film he ever made. It was very funny in Thanks a Million. I'm glad that you brought up the point that, you know, it was not a real feud that Jack Benny and Fred Allen had. Many people believe it was real, just like they thought that that Walter Winchell and Ben Burney's feud was real. That was just good publicity and kept these shows going on and on and on. He also made It's in the Bag, We're Not Married, and O. Henry's Full House.
What about the Henry Morgan feud? Who did he have that with?
Henry Morgan, the comedian?
Yes. He had a feud going with somebody, and I've forgotten who it was.
I don't remember who it was, but it didn't go on that long, because by that time, I think the feuds were all played out. you know, another one that was going for a while was, Jim Jordan, Fibber McGee, and Hal Perry, the great yoga sleeve.
I didn't know they had a feud.
Not a real feud.
In the films.
Oh, in the films maybe a little bit,
right.
But it was basically
not all that much. But they played real.
They
well
would snipe at each other. Yeah, but nothing really that would resemble a feud.
No, but I think of all the feuds that were going, Fred and Jack really milked it to an extreme.
Mm-hmm.
They kept that doggone thing going and going and going. Matter of fact, they played so well off of each other. As you mentioned, the scripts could be thrown out, and they could have probably gone on for hours.
What was your favorite Allen's Alley character?
I liked Kenny Delmar, Senator Klanghorn. He was funny. The first time I heard them, I was probably 4 years old, and those programs that they had, all of them that they had, Fred Allen and Jack Benny were probably two of the funniest, but you had Charlie McCarthy, Edgar Berger, Charlie McCarthy. That's another famous feud, by the way. W.C. Fields and Charlie McCarthy.
Right.
Really?
Right.
Oh, yeah, boy. Some of the things that were said by W.C. Fields about Charlie McCarthy would get beat down real quick if I were to mention them on the show.
Well, Marvin, thanks for checking in. We're going to play Senator Klaghorn from Allen's Alley here in a minute, okay?
Good.
It'll be for you.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye. We'll be right back. My guest is Robert Taylor, who's written the book, Fred Allen, His Life and Wit. In the studio, John and Larry Gassman of SPIRDVAC, the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy. I've got it memorized.
That's right.
Yes. We'll be right back. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Brame. Immediately following the network news at 5 this morning, Chuck Walsh totally updates all the news. This morning we're talking about the great wit and humor and life of Fred Allen. With us is Mr. Robert Taylor. Robert Taylor is with the Boston Globe. He's an art critic and a senior book critic there. And who's going to review your book there at the Boston Globe, or anybody? Are they going to just forget about it?
They have already forgotten.
Oh, that's too bad. The reviews on your book, what are they saying about it?
Yeah, well, they've been good for the most part, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Are they saying who remembers Fred Allen?
Yeah, some of them do. I think there are a lot of people who remember Fred Allen.
I think so. I'd like to see them call here this morning. If you remember Fred Allen, I hope that you'll call in Los Angeles, 520-TALK. Long Beach 639, South Bay is 679, San Gabriel Valley 448, Pasadena, Glendale, Burbank 244, Orange County, Riverside 750, Santa Monica on the West Side 301, and Talk TALK. Now, Marvin of the Movies talked about his favorite Allen's Alley personality, Senator Claghorn. Now, he was Kenny Dillmar, right?
Yes.
All right. That's a joke, son. That is. All right, let's take a joke, that is, was the way he used it. All right, here is a skit featuring Senator Claghorn in Allen's Alley.
Good to be back in Allen's Alley, Kenny. I guess Senator Claghorn isn't taking any chances these nights. He's had a neon keyhole put in the front door. Well, I hope the senator's in.
Somebody, I say somebody put the digit to my door. Oh, it's you, nature boy. Well, let's go, son. As the two men said when they was inventing the pencil, let's get to the point.
But,
I'm busier than a bumblebee at a nudist camp.
Now...
back, you know, from the Kentucky Derby, son.
Yeah.
My damper's down, my tail is dragging.
You wagered on citation?
I got touted off citation. I bet on a horse called Louder, Please.
Louder, Please?
As they was going to the post, I seen my horse was wearing a hearing device.
A horse with a hearing device?
Yeah, the race started. The battery in my horse's hearing device went dead.
Yes?
The jockey's yelling, giddy-up, giddy-up. The horse can't hear nothing. The jockey keeps yelling. The horse is turning around, squinting, trying to read the jockey's lips. And the horse's eyes is bad. It can't see nothing.
Oh, God.
Finally, the jockey gets down off the horse and starts running ahead with a little hay, hoping the horse will get the idea.
How did the race finish, Senator?
Well, the jockey came in ninth. Louder, Please finished tenth.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, I blew my poke, son. Yeah. Confound that Kentucky Derby. I lost everything. It was embarrassing.
Embarrassing?
There I was in that Confederate territory standing in my Union suit.
Too bad, Senator, but our question tonight concerns National Music Week.
Yeah, I know. All the Republican candidates is picking their campaign song.
Oh, each candidate has a different campaign song?
Everyone.
But tell me, what is General Eisenhower's song?
Maybe.
General MacArthur?
Show me the way to go home.
Stassen?
I'm sitting on top of the world.
Mr. Dewey?
I got a feeling I'm falling. I'm nobody's sweetheart now.
And Wallace?
All alone.
Does the president have a theme song?
No, son, he ain't observing the week until election time.
And when election day rolls around?
Harry's gonna face the music. So long, son. So long, Harry.
Senator Claghorn.
May 2nd of 48, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Of all the characters, that's got to be one of the great ones. Of course, everyone had their favorites.
Yes, and you'll notice that Fred is always the straight man.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's always saying,
role
yes,
reversal,
yeah. Or repeating whatever the last word was. Mm-hmm.
When you were researching this book, were you able to talk with... any of the people who are still alive that worked on the show?
Well, I wish I'd begun the book 10 years ago, but that's always the case.
Yeah.
I was able to talk to Portland and to Herman Wouk and Arnold Auerbach and Al Hirschfeld, many people who knew Fred, friends of his.
All right. What about these radio shows? Are they getting harder and harder to find? I know Spurdback, you have them, but I mean, they're not that easy to find anymore, are they?
No, but just as soon as you say that, then someone will come up and say, by the way, I happen to have. And so that does happen from time to time. Every once in a while, we'll find a Fred Allen show, but they're difficult to find.
Is there any one Fred Allen show that is a collector's, most wanted?
Most wanted? I don't think so anymore because so many people trade them around and make copies. So I think maybe the early stuff would be more valuable in that the chances are pretty good that if anybody has it, Boston University would have it, and they aren't allowing them out.
All right, let's say hello to Al. Al, you're on with Robert Taylor, John and Larry Gassman of Spurdvac. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And Ray, it's just delightful to hear about Fred Allen because he's touched my life in a few ways. My name is Al Burney, and I was a mimic when I was a kid. About 16, I was on the show with him where we did the rebroadcast to the West Coast.
Mm-hmm. You did it at midnight, huh?
Yes. and he was a very gracious man and very, very clever. For example, being a youngster, he asked me for my script in between shows. We had an hour or so, you know. We took a break. And he wanted to make sure that my script didn't get lost. And he graciously said, of course, we don't really need this because we could just ad-lib it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was typical of this very nice man. Ray, my parents were in vaudeville, and they knew Fred, so I told him about that on the show. And he said, and here you are still helping me out, because I told him my father helped him out in Subway in vaudeville, you know.
Al, did you do the impersonation of Fred Allen on the Great Radio Comedians television show?
Yes, I did.
I thought so. Because when I heard you do it just now, I thought that's got to be the same voice.
Right. We had people from Allen's Alley.
Right.
And so therefore they had other film on Jack Benny and Charlie McCarthy and Fibber McGee, but with Allen. They asked me to come in and work with Allen's Alley people.
Right.
And that was a thrill.
Kenny Del Mar and Minerva Pius.
Yes, and Peter Donald. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that was just so great it was just fantastic because they responded beautifully to me and we worked well and I knew him well enough to, you know, just speak conversationally as Fred Allen, you know, I'll give you one example of a great line of his, typical of his. He said, well, sir, they laughed when I put iodine on my pay envelope. They didn't know I had a cut in my salary. And, you know, all I had to do if I wanted to make jokes, you know, I've been a comedian all my life, and sometimes I would just have to think like Fred Allen and a witty thing would come out. He has, you know, there are certain things about comedians you can do that. You can do a Don Rickles thing, you know, just by thinking them, you know. And Fred Allen was very strong in my mind, a very delightful man.
Wonderful.
Okay, Al, thanks for checking in.
My pleasure.
All right.
Oh, well, incidentally, I'm going to be on divorce court Tuesday, so I just want to put that in because I work with another great comedian of today, Shecky Green, and we're on that together in kind of an unusual divorce court Tuesday.
Good. All right, Al, thank you.
Right, bye.
Bye-bye. One of the things that I didn't know was that Fred Allen was very big on Broadway.
Yes, he had been, during the 20s, he was in most of the many big Broadway revues and musical shows. The best ones with a little show and Three's a Crowd, which came at the end of the decade. But he had been for 5 or 6 years.
And he wrote some of the material.
A good deal of it, yeah. He was a play doctor, among other things.
Mm-hmm. So he went from the stage, from Broadway, to radio. But it was radio that really made Fred Allen, right?
Well, he thought of himself as a performer, as an actor, and never would have gone into radio if it hadn't been for the Depression.
At one time, he was a juggler.
Yes, he was billed as the world's worst juggler.
Never juggled on the radio that we know of.
No. We'll be right back. My guest, Robert Taylor, John and Larry Gassman of Spurdvac. We're talking about Fred Allen, his life and wit. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Brain. My guest, Robert Taylor, who has written a book called Fred Allen, His Life and Wit. John and Larry Gassman are here with all those great cuts from the Fred Allen Show, and thanks for dubbing those off.
Not at all.
They are the driving force of Spurdvac, the Society to Preserve and Encourage Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy.
Inc.
Yeah, that's right. Allen's Alley and the cast of characters, always loved them. I loved Titus Moody. Who was Titus Moody?
Titus Moody was Parker Finley, who was a character actor who had been in early radio with another actor called Arthur Allen that had done Snow Village sketches, some up-country kinds of New England things. and he went on the show. He was a playwright as well, and had worked with George M. Cohan on Broadway.
Really?
Yeah, and they had collaborated on a show called Fulton of Oak Falls. And Parker was, Titus Moody was Fred's favorite of the characters in the alley, because he thought he could be developed further.
All right, we've got Titus Moody here and a little skit, so let's tune in. The Fred Allen Show and Allen's Alley. Here we go.
Howdy, Bob.
Mr. Moody, do you tell me confidentially, do you approve of all of the Pulitzer Awards?
Why, not the most interesting story of the year, I don't.
No?
No. Most interesting story of the year, it happened on my farm.
Really? What was it?
Well, sir, one night last winter, my roan mare, Big Babe...
Yeah?
...was whinnying and moaning in her soul.
Uh-huh.
I called Dr. Gidney Pruitt. He's the vet.
The vet, huh?
Big Babe was laying on the floor groaning, and she was pointing to her stomach with her hoofs.
No kidding.
Dr. Pruitt, he says, it's her appendix, sure as you're born.
The doctor operated?
He made an incision from her fetlock to her withers.
He did.
I held the incision open.
Yeah.
The doc, he's a little fella.
Yeah.
He stepped inside the mare.
He got inside the horse?
Doc had his derby hat on and was carrying a lantern.
Got it.
As I was saying, I could see different parts of the horse light up,
yeah.
So I knew the doc was looking around me.
You trailed him, eh?
Yeah. Finally, Doc, he steps out, a Big Babe.
Uh-huh.
He's as white as a good humor man's pants.
Frightened, eh?
Doc says, Moody, he says, this mare is a freak.
A freak?
He says she's got the outside of a horse.
Yes.
But she's got the stomach of a hen.
The stomach of a hen?
Yeah. Doc says she ain't got no appendix.
You mean all that pain?
Doc says she's trying to lay an egg.
So, well, what finally happened?
Well, sir, Big Babe, she laid a dirty-looking egg 3 foot long, and it had fur on it. I hatched the egg.
You hatched the egg, and?
Inside, there was a chicken as big as a St. Bernard.
A chicken?
And that chicken had a harness on. So long, Buck.
There was Titus Moody.
Wonderful. Wonderful right. Pictures. Imaginative pictures that could only take place in radio.
Only in radio, the theater of the mind. Let's take a call from Ernie in San Dimas. Good morning. Oh, Emmy, I'm sorry. Emmy, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Emmy.
Oh, this is really a treat for me. It takes me back to some of the most delightful experiences I've had with radio. Fred Allen, I remember that so well with a great deal of delight.
Did you and the entire family sit around the radio and watch? Did you watch your radio?
We used to, when I was with my original family, mm-hmm. I'm alone now, and it brings so many good memories to me.
Good. Good.
I would like to be in contact with your association.
Okay, they'll tell
you. Call it to
Spurdvac. You do remember what it stands for, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and, now why don't you have you got a pencil handy?
Yes, I do.
All right, go ahead, John and Larry, give the address.
Post Office Box 1587, Hollywood 90078. You got that, Emmy?
The last number, Hollywood...
90078. And if you would just write to that post office box and ask for some information, then we'll send you out a packet of information about the club.
Just write Spurdvac.
S-P-E-R-D. I am so delighted to have this opportunity because I'm leaving this area. Although I'm a native Californian, I am becoming disenchanted.
You just can't take it anymore.
Moving to San Francisco, hi, Amy.
Well, I'll tell you, in my younger years, I listened to KVO, KFI KSL. And I have a little list here of the programs I listen to, if you are interested.
Well, you can give us about three, and then we have to leave.
The Whistler, The Shadow, Inner Sanctum, Paul Harvey, Ted Malone.
We just lost Ted Malone not so long ago.
Oh.
Yeah.
But we used to really enjoy him.
We're going to do a show on The Whistler sometime in the near future with another Malone who produced that program and wrote for it.
I'm sure it will be delightful, and I wish someday that you would give some recognition to this dying breed, the organist of the old era.
Okay, have to leave you. Thank you, Emmy. And my guest, Robert Traylor, and John and Larry Gassman of Spurred Back. We're talking about Fred Allen, his life and wit. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, KABC Los Angeles. It is now 2 o'clock. There is a thing here called King for a Day. What does that mean?
That was a skit that was on the Fred Allen Show. The guest was Jack Benny. And at about this point in time, quiz shows were becoming more and more popular. And as Fred Allen says, you have to give something away to stay in radio. All the options were coming up on a lot of the comedians. And so, well, to give it away would be to continue to tell you more. But this is one of the shows that is renowned among collectors as well as remembered among fans for a specific reason, which we'll hear about in just a few minutes.
What year was this?
This is May 26, 1946.
All right, let's take a listen.
People don't want entertainment today. A radio show has to give away things. Nylons, iceboxes, automobiles.
You mean to stay on the air, you have to give things away? Free?
Yes. I'll die first. Well, not me. I'm auditioning my new program tonight.
And you're giving things away?
Tons of stuff.
The strangers?
What's the difference who gets it?
Well, Fred, as long as I'm here in the studio...
Well, no, I'm sorry, Jack. Professional people cannot participate. It's a rule.
But don't you ever find people on these programs changing their names to get something for nothing?
Well, occasionally we do catch a phony, but we're on the air. What can we do?
Nothing. You have to give them the merchandise?
That's right.
Mr. Allen, we're ready for your audition.
I'll run along, Fred. So long.
So long, Jack. But the stage is loaded with hundreds of presents for the first man to answer our jumbo jackpot question. He will be king for a day. And here is our first eager contestant. Good evening, sir. What is your name?
Myron Proudfoot.
Myron Proudfoot? You look like a chap I know.
I'm not interested in your friends. Start giving things away, brother.
What is your occupation, Mr. Proudfoot?
I'm a chaplain in a bakery.
What does a chaplain do in a bakery?
I put wings on angel cake.
How long have you been in the cake business, Mr. Proudfoot?
Long enough to know a crumb when I see one. I see one.
Now, don't get sarcastic, Mr. Proudleg.
The name is Proudfoot, and make with the question.
All right. Who is the sixth president of the United States?
John Quincy Adams.
John Quincy Adams is correct, and Mr. Myron Proudfoot is king for a day. Immediately after this program, Your Majesty will be guest of honor at a banquet at Hamburger Heaven. Through the courtesy of the sanitation department, you will be guest conductor on the 11-5 garbage run through the Bronx. In your ermine robe, you will be whisked by bicycle to Orange, New Jersey, where you will be the judge in a chicken cleaning contest.
I'm king for a day!
And that's not all.
There's more?
Yes, we are going to start right now to make you look like a king. Your suit is a little baggy, King. Boys, take His Majesty's coat off.
Wait.
On our stage, we have a Hoffman pressing machine.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
An expert operating the Hoffman pressing machine will press your trousers.
Now, wait a minute.
King.
Alan, this is a great time.
15 years I've been waiting to catch you like
Alan,
this.
Alan, you haven't seen the end of me.
It won't be long now.
I want my pay.
Oh, that is funny.
Yeah, great, great clip.
That is very, very funny.
Oh, yeah. And people often wonder, did he really get his pants taken off on stage?
And
answer is yes, he did. Back
really?
Back in 1984, at our first convention, we had a panel on Jack Benny and
Frank Nelson and Viola Vaughn and George Balzer, whom we had last year.
Last
All right,
year,
let's,
yeah.
let's
And Milt
listen.
Josephsberg told the story.
Okay, let's listen.
I have got to tell you what really happened then, is Jack had talked to us and said he wished he could do something to break Fred up. And we told him, he dropped his pants and on one leg of the short said LS, on the other one said MFT.
That's right.
And the audience screamed and Fred didn't know what until he looked at Jack and finally he said, well, here's a man whose underwear ad-libs better than he does. Yeah. And then, of course, Jack fell down, underwear and everything.
That's quite a story.
Yeah.
Quite a story. Let's take a call. We have Richard in Hollywood. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're on with Robert Taylor and John and Larry Gassman.
Good morning to you all. You arouse, you awaken old memories for me. I knew Fred Allen well. I was on the stage with him. I'm an actor, and I came to New York to do a play in the 30s about Lord Byron at the Lyceum. And I was made an honorary member of the Lambs Club, the Lambs, which is the oldest actors' club in America, 44th Street. And it was a palatial home. And I met all of them there, any one of them you mention in the American theater, from the Metropolitan Opera to vaudeville, to the classical theater, radio. I worked in radio. I worked in...
Well, tell us about...
With Jay Justin.
Oh, yeah. Who was Mr. District Attorney.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, in New York.
Mm-hmm. In New York.
Yes.
And I went on... And the first time I met Alan at lunch. He came in, and he was a member. He didn't come in very often. I didn't know who he was. Somebody told me. He said, isn't that... The fellow from Boston, or his friend, a child, boyhood friend, introduced him to me as this is Mr. Sullivan, Mr. Allen. Mm-hmm. So I think there was some confusion about his name, was there?
Well, he was born Sullivan, but adopted the name of Fred Allen.
I see. So at the round table in the Lambs, with Frank Fay and Jack Pearl and... a variety of other people. It was hilarious. But I always felt that there was something. I think he was really a comic genius.
Yes, he was. Far ahead of his time.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Richard. My guests, Robert Taylor, who's written the book, Fred Allen, His Life and Wit, and John and Larry Gassman of Spurvac. We'll be right back. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Brain. Right in Los Angeles, our phone number is 520-TALK, San Fernando Valley 990-TALK, Santa Monica and the West Side 301 and TALK. And you'll be talking with Robert Taylor, who has written the book Fred Allen, His Life and Wit, and John and Larry Gassman of Spurvac, who has given us these great clips from the Fred Allen Show. How do you get these shows,
Some of them we trade for. Oftentimes, somebody maybe from, not necessarily from the Fred Allen cast, but others... who work in radio will say, I have a bunch of transcriptions and we'd like to get them copied off onto cassettes. Would you be able to do that for us? And we say, certainly. And oftentimes we have a chance to listen to material that we had thought was lost. And so we're always excited to have a chance to copy programs from disc to tape from whomever.
How did you get hooked on radio? Because you guys are
34.
Young. How old are you?
34.
34.
34.
So you don't really remember the heyday of radio.
No, not the heyday. I remember the last few shows when they were on in 58, 59, 60.
Right. Sure. And like yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Mm-hmm. Suspense. Some of the soap operas. Yeah.
But how did you get hooked on that?
About 1970, we heard some of the syndicated shows and some of the rebroadcasts, and we thought, I'd like to, not knowing anything about what they were all about, I'd like to tape these and play them for a friend. And so we played them for friends and thought, these are so good, we ought to keep these. So we did, and then got our own show on public radio, and
Spurred
the
back
rest is minutia.
Right, you do a show
on KPCC in Pasadena, which for the last year has been up on Mount Wilson, yes. So it's accessible to everybody. We play the
show. I can get it in Malibu.
Yes,
sure.
You can. Yeah. As a matter of fact, we've got George Walsh coming on Sunday.
Have you really?
Yeah. Yeah. Man who can rattle rooms and windows worse mm-hmm. than an earthquake. The man's got a voice that is just incredible.
So we play the show.
There's only one that can outdo him.
Yes.
Del Sharman.
Del Sharman will outdo him.
Yes. Yes, especially on a good phone line.
Yeah. Del had a cold when we had him on a year ago, and the operators called and said, you can't do this to us.
Did
Cut it out.
Did you hear the show I did with
Del?
Charbon.
Yes, yes. A wonderful show.
And we got to Speedy Riggs before he died, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's say hello to Kathy in Los Angeles. Kathy, good morning. You're on with Robert Taylor and Fred Allen.
Good morning.
I mean...
that's a great
John,
thing to say.
John and Larry Gashman.
You got an amazing show. You know,
oh, what a show we got.
You really pull them in. How did you do that, Ray? Who did you talk to?
Well, I applaud you, other gentlemen, at acquainting a new generation with a great era. I remember it well because my uncle was one of the chief musical writers for the show.
Really?
He worked for Peter Van Steeden.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So that's early on, in the 30s.
Oh, well, he was on until, I believe, quite a while. I mean, he also did Mr. District Attorney.
Mm-hmm.
But I've talked with Ray about music before, and I wondered, Ray, if you remember, besides Peter Van Steeden's band, who else provided music on that show?
No, I don't.
It was a very swinging show. It had the Merrimacks.
Right.
The best vocal groups that ever was. In fact, Herb Mills told me that, the Mills brothers told me once that that was his favorite vocal group. And it had a group that included Carl Kress, the great guitarist, and Chauncey Morehouse on vibes.
Hmm.
And it was really, they really presented great, great music on that show.
Do you know who also was a singer on that show after he left Jack Benny?
No.
Kenny Baker.
Oh, I vaguely remember.
For a short while. And Al Goodman was another orchestra leader on the show.
That's
and remember
right.
The five Rofe?
The five DeMarco sisters?
Wait a minute, you buried it.
Ferdy Rofe.
Early the Ferdy Grofe.
That's right.
Okay. Well, it was in the 30s that I used to go to see the show when I was a child. Usually it was a late broadcast. And in between, a lot of the cast went to Hurley's in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a drugstore, some kind of... I think it was a drugstore in the basement of the 30 Rockefeller that... We reopened between 9 and 12. It was supposed to be closed up, but they'd open up. We'd kind of got...
And for those who might have tuned in late, they did the show for the West Coast at midnight in New York.
I know. That's the one I used to see because it was easier to get us in as family. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't have actual tickets. So.
Kathy, do you remember anything in particular about the audience warm-up for the Fred Allen Show?
No, I do remember that there was one, but the ones I used to go see was when I was around 10 or 12 years, or maybe 10 years old. And I do remember, I can't remember who used to do the warm-up. I was trying to think of that earlier.
Usually Harry Von Zell?
It could have been. I think it was Harry Von Zell. I think you're right. I know he was on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a wonderful show, very funny. I appreciated it more as I got older, of course. But it was Studio 8H, as I recall.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The big studio.
Yeah, right. That was quite
great. They've cut that all up, you know.
So I've heard. Yeah, I haven't been there in many, many years.
It's not 8H anymore.
Isn't that where Toscanini is?
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was stationed there in the service for 6 months for, quote, on-the-job training, and I used to go in and watch Toscanini rehearse.
Oh. That must have been quite a sight. And there was a balcony to that.
That's right.
Studio.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It was a large place. I never did see Toscanini.
That's where the Firestone Hour came from and all those great shows.
Yeah. Those were great, great days. Well, keep them alive. I'm glad that these tapes and so forth are around because it's a shame to have lost all that brilliant humor. He was really brilliant.
Yes, he was.
Okay, well, thank you very much and keep it up.
All right, Kathy, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We have John on the line from North Hollywood. Good morning, John.
Oh, hi. I had originally wanted to ask if Gracie Allen was any relation to Fred, but I realized in listening to you that he probably wasn't.
No.
Were these shows actually acted out with props on stage for the audience, or did the actors stand with scripts in their hand?
Yes, to the latter.
The latter.
The sound man did all the work.
I wonder if there's any chance at a resurgence or a rebirth of radio drama and comedy.
If you leave it to John and Larry, yes.
I think it's just there's so much has been lost. I'm taking a class now at UCLA in the history of American broadcast, and we listened to a couple of radio programs at the beginning of the class. And I just noticed my imagination was clicked on and was just like going a mile a minute. I thought, this is so exciting. It's like my imagination is really working.
You're not used to it, are you?
No.
No.
It's like the visual stuff that we're seeing, you know, it's like everything is done for you.
The whole generation that's not used to it. The only way you're going to see radio drama or comedy come back, and this is hard line, is if the networks feel that they can make money off of it.
Right.
Otherwise, they're not interested.
It's just too expensive to produce it.
No, it really isn't. Not in comparison to television.
Where they're spending millions for $1 million for an hour.
But the networks aren't used to thinking about radio as drama or variety. They're so indoctrinated with news and music.
Yet the individual radio stations that play the old shows that are syndicated now by Michelson, most of them, do very well when they play them.
Yes.
Such as the
KNX Drama.
KNX Drama.
Sure, number one in its time slot.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. There, well, the contemporary Joe Frank, I've heard, which is really fascinating. So.
Yeah, that's different.
It's you know, it seems like there's a real market there that's missing somehow. There's so much of the same stuff on radio everywhere that you turn. It would just be really refreshing to.
Yeah, most of it's on public radio. Most of the radio takes the chances.
And then they're very strange hours, so you really have to watch your schedule. But I'm enjoying the program, and thanks for being there.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. I was talking to Michelson the other day. I saw him, and
he'll be there tomorrow. Today.
Oh, great.
Today. God,
yes. Has he told you anything about the Red Skelton show? He was working on that
last I heard he was trying to get permission to clear it.
Right. The old Red Skelton radio show with the mean little kid.
That's right. Yeah.
If I do it, I do it. But I do
it anyway.
I love that show.
Yeah. Wonderful show.
Oh, yes, yes. All right, let's take another call. We have Jeff on the line from Venice. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, how we doing?
Okay, you're on with Robert Taylor and John and Larry Gassman.
First of all, I want to say I'm big fans of Spurback. I've gone to several meetings.
Thank you.
And I've read Robert's book. I've enjoyed it a lot. I'm a big student of comedy.
Well, thank you. Say hello to him. Thank you.
Yeah, Robert, I got two questions for you. One, I was wondering on how hard it was to sell an idea of a book on Fred Allen. And number two, how helpful were Fred Allen's prior autobiographies when doing your book?
Well, to answer the first one, it was a little hard to sell because you get the usual thing that happens with old-time radio, that is that you have editors that say that no one ever heard of Fred Allen, which just isn't true. And what was your second one?
Was Fred had written two books. He Treadmill to Obliviation. I was wondering how helpful were they for.
They were very helpful because most of the information that you get on Fred is pretty random, and you have to pull it together. And at least you've got it some kind of overall picture of his career from those two books. One's the story of his show. The other is the story of his life up to a point. But of course, then you realize how much has been left out too.
Now, did Boston University, is that where most of the material is housed?
No, it's at the Boston Public Library. Fred was a stack boy there, and when he died, his widow, Portland, left his papers to the Boston Public Library.
And how, was Portland involved with the book?
No, she wasn't involved with the book. I mean, she, she certainly, read the book and liked it, but she wasn't actively involved.
Do you think that was an importance, a hindrance on your part, or do you think it would have been helpful?
Well, I think that I could, that the book went very well, and it had Portland's approval, and that was what counted.
Great, I love the book. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you, Jeff. Nice to have somebody who's read the book.
It is.
How's the book doing, by the way?
We've gone into a second printing with it.
Really?
Good.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Glad to hear it. We have a clip here now from the famous Eagle Show. Would you tell me about this show, John and Larry?
Speak. This show was on in 1940, March of 1940, and they had a gentleman on whose name was Captain Knight. Knight, yes. And he had an ego. I mean, he also had an eagle, and he was very well versed in the various information about an eagle and what it did and how it fed and so forth. Mm-hmm. So they brought the eagle on stage. And Fred,
on the East Coast show.
On the East Coast show. And Fred questioned Captain Knight about the eagle. And just as the bit was about to end, they decided to let the eagle fly. Well, you know, the eagle ad-libbed, let's just say. And
as Fred Allen said later, he ad-libbed a ghost's beret on Mr. Rockefeller's carpet. Wonderful. But you can hear the audience oohing and aahing as that eagle flies above them, and they just don't know what's in store for them next, if you'll...
All right, let's listen.
Wonderful.
Back to 1940, the famous Eagle Show.
You really should make a study of the eagle, Fred.
Well, there's no time like the present to start, Captain. Yes, I was just looking at those skin stilettos on Mr. Ramshaw there. I'd like to have his claws in my contract, Captain. If that eagle knew what was going on here, he'd be out to three of us in no time. It's been nice of you, Captain, to stop off on your lecture tour and bring Mr. Ramshaw in tonight. Now, before you go, I wonder if you could have Mr. Ramshaw give us a sample of his flying prowess.
Oh, yes. I think perhaps he might enjoy a short flight around the stage here. Now, stand back, Fred.
You bet.
Are you ready, Ramshaw? Go!
Excellent. A perfect three-claw landing. I'm surprised that Ramshaw didn't land on Van Steeden's bandstand. Any bird ought to go for the corn in Van Steeden's music. How are you going to get him down, Captain? Looks as though he might go with the lease in here after that.
I'll fix him down there.
All right. You get him down the back way, will you? All right, thanks. Mr. Ramshaw is up there, but with his back turned to the program, I guess he's seen all that interests him. This is apt to be a half-hour program tonight. All we need is Mr. Ramshaw to make his own station break, and we'll make it. Congratulate you. You were the first one to get a rise out of the eagle since he got up there. And I think as long as the eagle is a bird of prey, that we have just better discontinue the question and start praying. Thanks a lot. I won't even have time. Unfortunately, we didn't have time to get to the question tonight. We have a loose eagle in the studio. Mr. Rockefeller's hurriedly building a lot of ad-lib exits here. So much time has been taken up with the Captain Knight around there with a pound of hamburger. Tried to get Captain Knight was there with a minute steak. Well, now you see what happens. Captain Knight was back there with a minute steak a little while ago, but it was too well done, and the eagle sent it back. Now, he just arrived with the proper steak, and I can assure you that Captain Knight has the eagle or vice versa. We'll do the question.
All right. Did they do that show from 8H, or was it 6B or one of those other smaller studios?
No, I think that was 8H, and when they had done it in rehearsal, the orchestra was in another studio.
Mm-hmm.
But when they actually did it, during the performance, the eagle took off, and the glitter of the instruments in the orchestra frightened him, so he didn't come back.
They tied him down for the West Coast show.
All right. A week later, he refers to the eagle bit. So let's listen to Fred Allen on his show a week later. Here it is.
The eagle got more laughs than you did.
I could get laughs if I used the same devices. If I had feathers on and could sit on Harry's wrist, a feathered bulliver, I would get laughs.
Oh, that eagle was sophisticated. He was over your head.
That's what had me worried.
That was Peter Van Steeden with Fred Allen.
All right, we'll be back with Robert Taylor, who's written the book, Fred Allen, His Life and Wit, along with John and Larry Gassman of SPIRDVAC, the Society for the Preservation and Encouragement of Radio Drama, Variety, and Comedy, Inc.
You got me trained.
Right.
Yes, sir.
And we'll be right back. This is KABC Talk Radio, AM 790, and I'm Ray Vrain. 20 minutes now before 3 here at KABC, and let's say hello to Doris in Toluca Lake. Doris, good morning.
Well, good morning. This has been so much fun. I was a radio disc jockey during World War II, and this brings back so many happy memories. You know what?
Wait a minute. You were playing records?
Uh-huh.
For whom?
For a mutual outlet in Louisville, Kentucky.
Really?
Uh-huh. And I met a lot of the stars on the USO tour. We had some stage shows that we broadcast. I didn't meet Fred Allen. But my father was a friend of a friend. And one of the interesting things that this friend told my father, that is of Fred Allen's, and he told my father that Fred was an extremely religious man and that he went to Mass every morning. Was that included in your biography, Mr. Taylor?
Yes, that he was an extremely religious man and had a spiritual aspect, yes.
You know, what I think is so wonderful is that was the age of innocence. We all laughed so hard and enjoyed those radio shows so much, and they were all clean as a hound's tooth. You know, no misery. Everything was joyous and upbeat. It was a wonderful time to be alive.
Well, they were funny.
They were funny. That's right. They were truly funny. Well, thanks for letting me have my say.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Tell us about Falstaff.
Falstaff Openshaw, played by Alan Reed, was he was known as the shoddy Swinburne, the tatted Falstaff. He had a number of titles. He was a poet who was on the show and played the character of Alan Reed's. Character was a poet rather like John Barrymore.
Okay, we've got a clip of Falstaff. What year was this, do you know?
This one's 1946.
Okay, here we go.
You knock 3 times, do you think that's nice? In my last picture, the postman rang twice.
Ah, Falstaff, you have new poems tonight?
Indubitably. Hast heard, said the little bear to the big giraffe, let's eat a hyena just for a laugh?
No.
Or when I called her baby, her face lit up because she had a lantern jaw?
No.
How about this? Mother's home putting spikes in her shoes. She's playing first base for Vera Cruz.
Now, wait a minute, Paul. You exponent of the Hackney, tonight we are discussing the problem of sleep.
My poem awaits your bidding.
And what is your shut-eye sonata called?
My recipe for slumber.
How does it be?
If you cannot sleep at night and you don't know what to do, my recipe for slumber is just the thing for you. Don't waste time taking powders. Don't bother counting sheep. Don't dawdle in a hot bath, hoping you will sleep. Don't give up drinking coffee. Don't send for any glam man. You can eat and drink all night, and still you'll meet the Sandman. My recipe for slumber is older than the Sphinx. Just cut 20 tiddlies into halves, and you'll get 40 winks.
That's a funny one.
Clever. Alan Reed as Falstaff.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Who later went on to play Fred Flintstone.
Fred who?
Flintstone.
Now, the one we've been waiting for, at least I have, Mrs. Nussbaum.
Oh, yes, with Minerva Pius.
All right, let's take a listen. Here we go.
Let's try this next door here.
No.
Oh, Mrs. Nussbaum.
You're expecting maybe Hoagy Carbuncle.
Tell me, Mrs. Ann, do you have trouble sleeping?
Who could sleep? Every night with his dreaming, my husband Pierre is waking me up.
He dreams, huh?
Always his different things.
Dreams his different things? How do you mean?
One night Pierre is dreaming he is the lone stranger.
Yeah.
All night long he is yelling, hi-ho, Silver.
Hi-ho, Silver, huh?
Upstairs is living a Mr. Silver.
Yeah.
All night he is yelling back, hi.
I see.
One night, Pierre is dreaming he is an automobile, a roadster.
A roadster?
In his pajamas, Pierre is sleeping with the top down.
Oh. Fine.
Hence, he is dreaming he is an Alka-Seltzer.
An Alka-Seltzer?
All night, Pierre is fizzing.
Well, no wonder. No wonder you can't sleep.
Last night, he should drop dead.
What happened?
He is dreaming he is a tea kettle.
A tea kettle, huh?
All night long, Pierre is whistling.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
That's my favorite character.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she was super.
Yes, she was. What did you learn about Mrs. Nussbaum?
Well, she could do any kind of a dialect. I mean, in that case, she's a Yiddish housewife from the Bronx, but she could do almost anything in the way of dialect.
Did she work on other shows?
Yes.
She even worked on The Benny Show in 43, early 44, for some reason. I don't know why. She was in Hollywood for a little while. Maybe
yeah.
Did you
movie?
Know? Movies?
No, I don't.
Yeah, but you hear on some of The Benny Shows. She did a lot of other shows, too, in a straight voice as well.
You
come across her.
And she does have a scene with Fred, and it's in the bag where the two of them are together. Mm-hmm. And
Benny's in that movie, too.
Yeah.
Oh.
Is that feedback from Minerva Pius? Is that what that is?
Robert, when you were putting this book together, did you go and listen to a lot of the Fred Allen shows?
I listened to as many as I as I could, but mainly I read the scripts. I read all the scripts are there from the first one up until the last one at the BPL, and I read them all. And it was
did you do any listening to shows and reading the script at the same time to see how much they differed?
No, because it's pretty hard to do that up in the rare book room without disturbing everybody. I suppose I could have used earphones.
It is fascinating. I've done that on occasion.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to see how much he either took out or ad-libbed in the radio show in comparison to what he wrote down on paper.
I found his corrections fascinating because he frequently filled in longhand things that changes and...
In lowercase?
When he wrote in longhand, he wrote in capitals.
Uh-huh.
But when he typed only lowercase.
I wonder why that is.
He used to say he couldn't shift for himself.
Yeah, he'd be the type.
Yeah. I fell into that one.
Sure.
We'll be right back with Robert Taylor and John and Larry Gassman of Spurdvac. Last call, 520-TALK, San Fernando Valley, 990, Santa Monica in the West Side, 301, Orange County, Riverside, 750, for Mr. Robert Taylor and John and Larry Gassman of Spurdvac. Mr. Taylor has written a book called Fred Allen, His Life and Wit. Another quick thing from Fred Allen. This is with Groucho Marx, and you're saying that it was never broadcast, is
never
that right?
Never broadcast. This was done in 1951. It's a post show, right after they'd done... a Groucho Marx show. Allen and Marx got up on the stage and literally did about 10 minutes of ad-libbing for the audience.
Really?
All right. Never broadcast.
Let's take a listen.
Well, Fred, I don't know what else we can say to this audience except curse them out for showing up here.
Well, I don't know. I think they've been a wonderful audience, and I think it's really a great show.
Well, thank you, John. This may be the thing that'll bring you back to California.
Well,
if it does that, it'll have accomplished its purpose because I've been trying to get him out here for 20 years.
Well, I'm out here now. The thing is to stop me from going back. Nobody's expected that. Well, I have to go back. I have a lot of relatives there, and it's too expensive to bring them out here. If this was downhill from New York, my relatives would have walked out here, and I would have been happy to stay here.
But most of your relatives are downhill, aren't they?
Yes.
Now, why don't you bring them as far as Kansas City?
Halfway.
Well, I'd like to bring them to Kansas City and leave them there. Is there an ashtray in the audience? Is there a writer in the audience? Well, I think this isn't bad for no material, which no of these shows have, but
I think the audience by this time has recognized the fact that we have no material at all.
I think. And also that we personally have no money, so there's no interest in us from now on. I mean, we
But you're not working during the summer. Of course, that eliminates you as a...
No, but I have 10 or 12 sleepless weeks ahead of me now, Fred.
Sleepless?
Yes, because you may wind up with a sponsor like DeSoto.
Oh, I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so. You were...
Don't get an automobile.
No,
then you'll have to buy one of those cars, too. The old days, I was on for Elgin Compact. All I had to do was buy a $3 compact.
Well, I was on
give you a good, but you wouldn't want to give a good an automobile, would you?
Not frequently, no. But I was on for Salopatic for 8 years.
Well, there's nothing like starting from the bottom.
You know, they were masters of the ad-lib.
Weren't they, though?
All ad-lib.
That's right.
Yeah. Fantastic. We have another quickie here, and we might want to get this in. This is Fred Allen, and it has to do with McCarthy and the court battle. What is that?
The McCarthy, this is when Fred Allen went back on the air after having been off the air because of high blood pressure. So he went back on the air, and they built 2, 3, 4 weeks with McCarthy appearing on Allen's show and vice versa.
Charlie McCarthy.
Yeah, at that point, Edgar Bergen was in New York. As a matter of fact, McCarthy was trying to, or Allen was trying to lure McCarthy away from Bergen the first week of this thing. And so they're praising each other in the middle of the show. And McCarthy says to Allen, "You're just a wonderful person. You're a scholar. You're a gentleman." And Allen says, "I shall kiss the hem of your coat."
Let's pick it up.
McCarthy, oh.
Come in. Is this a tenderleaf peach home ground?
Yes.
Oh, it is? Oh, that's peachy. Then you must be Fred Allen.
Yes, that's true.
Well, if you're Fred Allen, you're just the man I want to see, and, I don't exactly want to see you eat it because you're not very pretty to look
at. Now, wait a minute. Just wait a minute. Wait a minute, Bud. Who are you?
Well, I'm Ursula Twing. Yes, Ursula Twing. And I am a lawyer.
You're a lawyer?
Yes. Do you want to feel my briefcase?
Well, no. Take your word for it.
I am a lawyer, all right. Well, you're in grave trouble, Mr. A. Allen. Yeah, not exactly grave either, because I don't think it'll send you that far.
No.
But no. But my client is suing.
Your client?
Yes, Charlie McCarthy. Tonight you appeared on Edgar Bergen's program.
On the protest.
Yes,
that's
and I
true.
Didn't. And you said.
Makes no sense then.
And you said too much, and you said some very nasty things about Charlie, and you've just driven that little boy into a tizzy.
Oh, I have, huh?
Yes, and you're a very bad boy.
Now, look here, Twain. You and Charlie McCarthy don't scare me. I'll fight this thing through to the Supreme Court. And if that doesn't work, I'll go right over Frankfurter's head straight to Mr. District Attorney.
You can, as far as I'm concerned, you can go to straight to anywhere you want. But I was here to serve you with a subpoena. Better, you are ordered to appear in court next Sunday, and you had better be there too, Smarty.
If you had anything left over from the other program, put it in here. You know, we can always.
Yeah, that's a few weeks afterwards, yeah.
Uh-huh.
All
right. Let's take a call from Harry. Hello, Harry.
Howdy, Bub, and howdy to your guests. This is Parker Fennelly, by courtesy of Maggie Rudkins.
You worked for Petridge Farm, didn't you, Parker?
Yeah, I certainly did. I didn't want to use the term because that's a brand name, you know.
Yeah, but you make a lot of bread that way.
That's right. Oh, Bub, that's true. You know, that commercial was interesting. He started with that. They got an actor taking his place. Is he dead now? Is Parker gone?
Yeah, died about a year or two ago.
Are you serious? He lived that? I thought maybe he was gone years
no,
ago.
No, he was 90. 96 or 97, wasn't he?
Wow. He was 95.
95.
I'll have to look in the variety for that. Listen, I got a little bit of trivia for you before I ask a couple of questions. In the September the 24th issue, 1920, of Big Variety, the Eastern Variety, there's a full top page ad. It says Jack Benny, and then in parentheses, formerly Ben K. Benny.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Very interesting.
He changed his name, didn't he?
He changed his stage name.
Yeah, he had several names.
He was being confused with Ben Burney.
Ben Burney. Yeah.
Okay. Now, my mom and dad were in vaudeville. They had an act called Hollingsworth and Crawford in What Price Bob, about the Bob craze. And pretty soon that Bob hair became a popular thing, the act went down the tubes because, you know, who was going to come in and see a skit about Bob hair? But at any rate, we had at one time here, my brother still has them, I hope, home movies of Fred Allen and Portland Hoffa and my dad and mother standing in front of one of the Orpheum, the Keith Orpheum Circuit Theaters. I don't know where that would be, but it would have been when, Fred appeared at the same time. What was his act, you know?
Disappointments of 1927.
Disappointments of 1927.
Yes.
Therefore, it had to be 1927 that those films were made, I assume.
Yes.
Is Portland still living?
Yes, she is.
That's remarkable. You see, we don't get information like that. Like there was a famous singer, I've forgotten his name now, that used to sing Abdullah Bulbul Amir, Frank Crummett, and he had his wife also sang with him on radio. When he died, she disappeared. And that's the way it goes, I guess.
All right, Harry, thank you for the call. I want to get one more on here.
All right.
All right, thank you very much. Okay, give me number 10, and we have Brian on the line here from Temple City. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I was always a big fan of all the comedy shows on radio, and I particularly love Fred Allen. And I wondered whether Spurdvac has made accessible any of these tapes for the general public.
Yes. If you join, yes. Yes, yes.
Okay, could you give me the address again?
Box 1587, Hollywood, California, 90078.
And I want to ask you one other thing. Another favorite of mine was Easy Aces. Is there anything existing on that?
Quite a bit. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I love that Goodman and Jane Ace.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I wanted to know, so thanks a whole lot.
All right, Brian, thank you.
What's one of the hardest shows to find, radio shows?
Well, there's a show that everybody in the world is looking for, the early I Love a Mystery shows from Hollywood. There's also a show called Latitude Zero.
I thought I Love a Mystery... That's right. It did come from Hollywood.
It came from Hollywood first, then New York.
Those
later
are the
on.
Tough ones
yes,
to find.
Yes.
Yeah, those are rough. A show called Latitude Zero is another tough one that everybody's looking for.
Was that when Dresser was doing the announcing?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. There are a few of those around, but not too many.
Mm-hmm. That's 1939 to 43.
With Doc, Reggie.
And Jack. Oh, yeah, great show.
Yeah.
Carlton's still doing well.
Oh, yeah.
A few years back, I was fortunate. She's not doing anything now, but I had Mercedes McCambridge.
I heard the show.
You heard that?
Yeah,
oh,
yes. Yeah. When you had Carlton on,
that's
she
right,
called.
With Carlton
yes.
Moore.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. And she doesn't do any of that now.
No, unfortunately not.
Yeah. Robert Taylor, I want to thank you very much, first of all, for writing the book, and thanks for spending 3 hours with us.
Thank you, Ray. It's a pleasure.
I can't think of a more delightful subject than to write about Fred Allen, his life and wit.
I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. And John and Larry, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Ray. Last 3 hours.
Yes, how about it? It goes awfully fast.
It sure does.
I'll see you at the, what's the name of the Viscount?
The Viscount Hotel.
A little later today. Frank Duvall, Lena Romine, big band discussion.
Yeah, and anybody who wants to show up can, right?
Of course.
You bet.
All right. Now, I'll see you a little bit later.
Okay.
So, we'll let C.B. sign it off here. Go ahead, C.B.
This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.
Take care, gentlemen.
Okay, all right.
Thanks, Ray.
This is Talk Radio, and I'm Ray Brain.